Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoyed the program. Time now to talk movies. Richard Leonard, the Catholic Film and Television Office, is with us. Richard, good to have you with us once again.
It's great to be back,
John. We haven't spoken for a while because you've been away.
I have. I've been on sabbatical, which Jesuit priests get every 10 years, and particularly after you do a PhD, which I did 10 years ago. And so I've been overseas, and that was wonderful.
Relaxing or...?
Mostly. I was went to New York to write a book, as one does, and I was writing my next book, and then I gave some lectures at conferences in the United Kingdom and in Ireland. And then I was a juror at the Warsaw Film Festival, which I absolutely loved.
Which brings us right to where we need to be.
Exactly.
Film and what's been happening. Now, we're approaching the holiday season, so let's divide this into sort of two sections if we can. One, the sort of look back over the year, what you think the highlights were, and then what you think we might look out for over the coming holiday season. So let's start with the big ones for the year.
I think there have been some fabulous films this year, and there have been some awfully dreary and pretty lame ones as well. I've got to say to start, and it does cause me great distress to say this, that it hasn't been a great year for Australian films this year. While I think the films that might win at what was the AFI Awards, the Australian Oscars, I hope The Burning Man gets up, but it's actually a film from last year, but it didn't get into the competition. But probably they'll go for Laura, which was made by Kate Shortland and is in fact a German. It's all in German and it's a beautifully made film. But it's not quite our own cinema on the screen, though the majority of the money comes from Australia. So just give a nod to Australian films first. The Burning Man, if people haven't seen it, is worth seeing. Keep your eyes out for The Burning Bush and the whole idea of Moses and conversion in this film, because this totally obnoxious chef, he goes through this extraordinary conversion and literally sees at one stage, in a rather mystical moment in the film, a burning bush. So it's right there literally in your face. So I hope The Burning Man gets up, because I was deeply moved by it, and I think though it wasn't in this calendar year, it is in lining up for the awards for the Australian Oscars early in January.
Yeah, we should perhaps take the opportunity to pay a passing reference here to Australian television, because there have been one or two good programs this year on Australian television. The Slap. A couple of others.
I want to think about The Slap for a moment. I remember reading that book years ago, and I had forgotten that the man in the backyard slapped the child's face. I'd forgotten that, and that's a game changer. Yeah. You know, I just remember a naughty boy who got a slap from an adult in the backyard. He slapped his face. Isn't it incredible that changes? That's an entire game changer, that to slap someone's face anyway, but for an adult who's not a parent, but even for a parent to slap their child's face is an incredibly invasive and presumptuous and violent thing to do, an extra added violence to corporal punishment. Now, the good films for the year, though, Hugo was wonderful. Right at the beginning of the year, many people may have forgotten about it, but absolutely beautiful. One of the best 3D films I think I've seen. So beautifully done.
It's interesting to see that there is now a subculture of discussion among directors about how to make films legitimately 3D, that use 3D as a dramatic element, a legitimate dramatic element, rather than just, oh, it's in three dimensions, isn't that novel?
Well, we've actually seen some films, of course, go back to the cutting room floor to be put into 3D, which I think ends up being a bit of a disaster. I think, in fact, the best stories are ones on our turf right tonight. The mystical, the spiritual, the metaphysical, the mythological, they lend themselves to 3D. And this was a mystical, hyper-realism story. It was just beautifully told and wonderfully executed. I thought that was great. Tinker Tailor, of course, did well at the awards, particularly at the BAFTAs. Yeah. And if you're a fan, or even if you're not a fan of the John le Carré novel, beautiful, very restrained performances, and you just knew that secret. That secret was we were going to be held out right to the end of that film to find out exactly what the card needed to be played on the table.
And it stands up very well against the old Alec Guinness television version of the story Story, if you've ever seen that, because that was hailed at the time as one of the best interpretations or realisations of Le Carré, and I thought this one stood up very well.
Yes, I think it did. British cinema at its best, and even the muted look, although it was, of course, by a Swedish director, so he brought a different sensibility, I think, but all those muted colours and grey and dark, and to tell a fairly grey and dark story. One that'll surprise some of our viewers and maybe offend some of them, but I thought Shame, the film with Fassbender, the German-Irish actor who's really coming into his own now, was all about sex addiction. And here's a man who starts with pornography at work, and then it ends up going into, it takes over his life. While there would be a lot of our listeners right now who would not want to spend a couple of hours with a sex addict, I think it actually says really important things about an incredibly important issue. This poor guy can't have any sustained personal intimate relationships because pornography and prostitution have taken over his life. And of course, some listeners would know there's such a thing now as Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, where people now go through a 12-step program trying to attend to their sex addictions. And that film had it on the big screen.
And of course, Sessions too.
Sessions, another beautiful film, but very different. I didn't know there were these people who, as you know, and as some of our listeners might remember, I have a disabled sister who's a quadriplegic, but I didn't know that there were some people who were therapists who help disabled people have sexual intercourse. And this was a very interesting film. I really liked the Sessions. I know there are some people who would hate to think that a disabled person, you know, has sex outside of marriage, but this guy couldn't do anything else. And he actually goes to his priest for counselling. And actually, the priest is not badly written. Every time I see a priest with a significant role in a film, I almost assume I'm going to hate it from the word go, because they're normally prissy and they're sort of high camp and they're pretty terrible, or they're criminal and dreadful and understandably,
there's,
I guess.
There's no middle road.
No middle road, and no sort of really humane or generous character is developed there. But this guy was, and his penitent, who is disabled, lives in an iron lung, he wants to get permission from the priest, who struggles to give him permission but understands his significant dilemma. And it's what the old, in Catholic moral theology, we would have talked about objective and subjective morality, that objectively, even a quadriplegic who wants to have sex before he dies is always sinful and always wrong. But subjectively, well, this wonderful confessor can even understand that maybe that wouldn't be a bad thing to do. So he's generous, or he's trying to be generous, without ever giving him consent. It's a generous film and a warm film. And again, there are some of our listeners who probably wouldn't want to see it, given the subject matter.
And it operates at a couple of levels. You know?
It does. The other thing about it is it's not at all prurient. And the woman who is a sex therapist is not a prostitute. And there's only a very small group of people that she works with, and they're severely mentally or physically disabled people. Now, while she would provide services that women in prostitution provide, she is doing it for very different sorts of reasons. So there are complex things that raise some interesting issues in there. I liked a couple of, well, while we're on disability, and of course, given my own sister situation, anything about disability normally hooks me in pretty quickly. But The Intouchables is a beautiful French film. And even if any of our listeners right now hate subtitles, we'll offer that up and get in there to the cinema to see this, because it'll go off very soon. It's still on right at the moment. Beautiful story based on a true story about a very wealthy man who's a quadriplegic who goes through a whole string of carers, and my goodness, we discover why he's totally obnoxious, until an African French man, arrives to take on the job. Really, he's on the take. He's a bit of a crook, a small-time crook, this guy. But of course, it's about how this relationship touches and changes both of them. It's just so beautifully realised and wonderfully observed. And the thing I liked most about it is it's one of those films where, when you have ever lived with somebody who needs an awful lot of help because of their disability, this film doesn't run away from some of the toileting issues, the showering issues, the lack of dignity, the loss of control, all of those issues. And it really touched me very deeply. And it was a wonderfully feel-good, but that doesn't do it justice. It was also more profound than that, about the power of all of us dealing with all the different disabilities, whatever name they might be in our lives. So that's one's highly recommended, and it's still at the cinema. I loved Argo. I thought Argo was just fun. Like, I I had to go home and just look up about 10 websites to be convinced that this was a true story. It is so inconceivable that, as Ben Affleck said, when he read the script, he just couldn't have believed this is true. And if you made the film and it wasn't true, everyone would say it was a fantasy.
And it's cast in a way which is quite clever. That is, those who are the victims, the people who are essentially the prisoners in this, are all genuine non-entities as actors. And the people playing the dramatic, the interventionists, are highly drawn characters and well-known characters. So it actually is very cleverly thought through, I think, this film.
Well, actually,
and
I
it's played at
that.
A comedy level, too, at some
level. I didn't notice
level.
That until you just said it. So that's something that escaped me, but it's absolutely true. And that, we better fill in our listeners who haven't seen the film. But Argo, basic premise is a small group of employees of the United States government, when it's taken over by the Iranians, 1979, I think it is, they escape to the Canadian embassy. And so then the US government, the CIA, they want to rescue their people from the embassy. And so they put together this absolutely extraordinary story of convincing the Iranians that a Hollywood company wants to come to Iran to make a film about aliens invading the Earth. And they've chosen Iran in which to place all the action. And this is actually true. And so each of these people in the Canadian embassy, or the employees, end up having to take on the persona of somebody who works on the film. And that's their backstory, and they get to the airport and they go home. If you haven't seen it, we've just wrecked it for you. But I assume you know that probably this has a good outcome.
I think the two characters that steal the show, or risk stealing the show on many occasions, are Alan Arkin, who probably has the best one-liner of the year, I think.
Argo was just good fun. But also, it did talk about people under pressure, and you can imagine sitting up, being holed up in both the US embassy but also the Canadian embassy. Go off and see Argo or get it out on DVD.
And, of course, the other big one is Skyfall.
This Skyfall.
Has been 50 years of James Bond.
Absolutely loved it. And I haven't always been the biggest Bond fan. To my compatriots right now who don't like Bond that much, this one's worth it. And from a religious point of view, from a spiritual point of view, I couldn't get over how much more iconography, how more spiritual. Like, at one stage he says his hobby is resurrection, which is sort
great
of true,
line.
Which is absolutely true, but his hobby is resurrection. Skyfall, the name of his mansion or his family mansion in the north of Scotland, of course, comes from the whole Celtic tradition of where heaven breaks through to earth. So Skyfall was where there are breakthroughs of heaven to earth in Celtic spirituality. And, of course, some clergy are sometimes called skydivers. When I was a prison chaplain many, many years ago, prison wardens, when we arrived at the gate of the prison, used to say, here are the skydivers. So even in my own experience as a clergyman, I've been called a skydiver. We've got Hagia Sophia, St. Paul's Cathedral, Westminster Abbey. They're all backdrops to the drama. But one of the things I love best, and I'm going to wreck this now, so here's a spoiler alert. At the end, when they get to Skyfall, they have to escape through a priest hole and they have to get to a chapel. And then when there's a certain incident that happens in the chapel, we have a whole Pietà moment.
Absolutely.
Which is just so screamingly obvious, but it's in reverse, but that's giving away far too much already, and people are already annoyed hearing this much. So I may as well keep going, because even we find Bond's mother on her tomb, her name is Delacroix of the Cross. These aren't by accident. This is one after the other after the other. Now, all just on their own, yes, they're of no significance individually. Put it all together, and there's a very different sensibility going on in this film.
Sam Mendes, the director, and the cinematographer are clearly deliberately having fun with this, because this film is self-consciously cinematographic in the sense of composition. Every frame and every effect is done with such depth of care and quality that you're almost wanting to sort of admire every single visual frame, every scene as it's set up.
That's true. And I do think there's one problem with the film. There are a couple of problems. There are actually a couple of major problems in the narrative. But one is that one of the things with the film as a film is the opening sequence in Turkey is so magnificent. that they never quite get to that standard again. And it's a
the
wonderful
race across
way to
the
start.
Grand Bazaar.
Oh, it's a great. And then the train. And any of us who have ever had anything to do with filmmaking, you know, though they're so complex to do and to get right, even when you've got such a very big budget. But the whole thing's about sacrificial love. The entire film is about sacrificial love. Love for M, love for the nation, love for truth and justice.
And even the bad guy is a victim in some way of perverted love.
Javier Bardem has to sue somebody soon for bad hairstyles. Like No Country for Old Men was just disgusting hair. And here he is back now with blonde disgusting hair. Like, the poor man can't win a trick.
He's still a really good, nasty guy.
Oh, he's a wonder. Oh, well, as he says, you know, who wants to play a goodie when I get roles this juicy? But when we were getting all the way through to the chapel and then we find the grave and it's Delacroix, I thought, oh, look, they're now just slamming me over the head with one piece of iconography after another. So I loved the Bond film on every level.
A great way to end the year, but let's preview very briefly, because we've only got seconds left, what's coming out over the holidays. The one thing in this van that we must refer to is Life of Pi, of course.
Life of Pi, which is a deeply mystical film. Well, I haven't seen the film, but I've read the book, and apparently Ong Lee, great director, has done a fabulous job in realising it. So I assume Life of Pi will be superb. The Hobbit, even if you're not a Tolkien fan, we love Peter Jackson's work. Our own dear Kate Blanchett's in it, and it's a wonderful piece, apparently beautifully done. For those of us who love the musical, Les Mis will be an absolutely essential piece of viewing. It's getting mixed reviews, but people who don't like the musical film comedy genre then tend not to like this film either. But my hunch is I'm going to love it. And then we've got Lincoln. And that'll be a very serious film. It is a serious film. It's getting grave reviews all around the world. It does paint President Lincoln, apparently, in a very different light to any hagiography we've had before.
The sort of real political Lincoln.
It is.
Which will be very insightful.
And his wife, Sally Field, in the reviews, the press reviews I've read so far, his wife plays a much more significant role and did, in fact, in his White House and was a highly opinionated woman. And, you know, somehow she's lost. Is it Claire? No. Whatever her name was, Mrs. Lincoln, anyway, is lost to history's page. But in all the research, this film starts to recover what a strong, opinionated woman she was, and a very juicy role for Sally Field.
Richard Leonard, we've run out of time. But
a
it's
pity.
Been a great rip through the year, a preview of the holes. And next time we get you back, it'll be time to talk about who's on the awards list.
Oh, that'll be great. Look forward to it, John. And a happy Christmas to you and all our listeners.
Richard Leonard on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia. This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. You can download your favourite Sunday night interviews from our website at abc.net.au/Sunday Nights with an S. Thank you for listening.